right, we have one case on our 10:30 docket, Burgess versus Denton County. If the clerk will please announce counsel and their time.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard Gladden to argue for appellant and Ms. Jennifer McClure to argue for appellee.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gladden.
Good morning. May it please the court. The court, this same panel, a little bit less than a year ago, heard a case very similar to this involving some of the same parties. That was the Burgess versus State. As the court will recall, I'm sure you probably even read the decision before you came in, the court wasn't able to reach the questions that are raised by this appeal due to the fact that the nature of Article 5, Section 8 does not allow someone to challenge collaterally an order of a commissioner's court unless they've met some extreme burden or can show voidness of an order. As the court probably is aware now, we did go back after the court's decision back in May of last year, and we filed an independent or separate lawsuit directly against the commissioner's court and various other governmental officers and entities. Before I go much further, I did want to, because I may have to talk about it more, but I'll try to talk about it now just briefly. The state at this point in time has filed a cross appeal asserting that neither the trial court nor this court would have jurisdiction because of a legislative immunity their legislative immunity is basically even with regard to prospective equitable relief, that is declaratory or injunctive relief, no jurisdiction is available in the district court. There's two problems with that. Number one, they don't address Article 5, Section 8, which expressly in the legislative history that I set out in one of the briefs show clearly that that's the purpose of Article 5, Section 8, is to provide a judicial remedy in the district court to challenge and supervise and invalidate, if appropriate, orders of commissioner's courts. And that would be an equitable remedy. All the cases say you can do that. The second reason why the legislative immunity thing could not apply in this case is because, but for other than the commissioner's court, all the other defendants are not legislative actors acting in a legislative function. So even if we didn't have Article 5, Section 8, their legislative immunity defense would not apply to those other defendants. Now, going directly to the merits of the case, the district court in this case procedurally did grant a preliminary or a temporary restraining order, and then after hearing some testimony, and then when we had a subsequent hearing a week or so later, denied our application for a temporary injunction. That this appeal is an accelerated interlocutory appeal from that order of the district court. We see two clear errors in the district court's decision. I've set out on page 11 of my opening brief, the blue brief, the standards that are going to be relevant at page 11 in considering this appeal. You've got one standard that talks about, actually from the Burgess case, that talks about when a temporary injunction, what standards apply, and that we'd have to show a probable right to relief as well as imminent irreparable harm. The trial judge did not disagree with us, in fact agreed with us, that the circumstances presented established that we are going to sustain or experience imminent irreparable harm. These cases, final judgments were entered in about 93 of the cases on November 19th. A motion for new trial was granted in those same 93 cases where certified mail had been imposed. Motion for new trial was granted in January, and now we've got days for final hearing on those 92 cases. I believe it's March 16th. I would re-urge, I don't know whether this court can render a decision favorable to us before March 16th, but I would submit to the court that its prior ruling that denied interim relief, we'd re-urge that. The court in that prior order denying interim relief cited the possibility or a rule that would allow us to post an appellate bond in those 100 and some odd cases, that is the Judgment Nisi cases, That doesn't make sense to me because you've already ruled in the prior case that we could not appeal, that there would be no jurisdiction to appeal from an adverse from a ruling in a judgment NYSAC case with regard to the certified mail. My arguments on this appeal are pretty much identical to what they were before. We do have a more developed record. I think the record here is very clear that the Commissioner's Court never considered, never even had presented to us, to them, any recommendation that certified mail charges be $60. Constable Dotson testified in this case at one of the hearings below that he was on the committee and has been on the committee since 2005, they were confined solely in the recommendation to personal service. And for that reason, they were taking into account gasoline, transportation of vehicles. The trial court in this case nonetheless implicitly ruled that the Commissioner's Court did actually rule on it. I've even got a videotape where y'all can see them doing nothing for about 20 seconds. The greatest concern I have is that the district court in this case, in talking about what is higher than necessary or higher than the cost of the service, has included capital expenses, fuel costs.
Well, the bottom line of your argument is, if it's reasonable the fee to go out physically and serve somebody is $60, it can't possibly be reasonable then just to put it in there.
The clerk said it's far less than $60.
That's my point. Yeah. It's reasonable to charge $60 for a constable to take it, go out, physically serve somebody. It can't possibly be reasonable to be $60 just to put it in there.
Well, I don't think it makes any difference what they do in other forms of service. I'm saying by the statutory scheme set up, it can't be higher than the cost of certified mail. And those are pretty well established in this developed record, and the district clerk herself said there's no way it costs. It does not cost $60. And the district court, in its reasoning, says a necessary expense is also the endemic waste inherent in government. Well, I don't think the legislature intended to authorize charging people for inherent waste that may or may not be endemic in governmental agencies. They were talking about cost of certified mail, and it says not higher than the cost of certified mail. It doesn't say whatever's highest. And it seems to me that the interpretation of the statute that's been given by the trial court is whatever. If you had some other service to fly on a plane somewhere to serve somebody, under the reasoning the district court followed, we could be charged for somebody getting on a plane somewhere, even though they didn't ever perform that function. They gave it to a postman at an expense of around $5. And so I just submit to you that there's a legal question that the district court misinterpreted the meaning of the word necessary cost as it relates under the statute to certified mail.
Was there any evidence regarding what any other counties might charge for this type of
thing? It was not admitted for the record. I objected. The court ruled that it was inadmissible because it wasn't relevant to what happened in Denton County. It was made a part of the record for record purposes only, like a bill of exception sort of thing. This issue has not been raised in any other court of appeals that I'm familiar with. I would mention that going all the way back to the 1840s, as well as recently as 2009, both the statutes and the decision law has always said that court costs are to pay only for necessary judicial costs. They're not remunerative. It's not a money-making scheme that the legislature, through court costs, can balance the budget, which seems to be kind of part of the reasoning of the district court, is that we can pay for pensions for government employees and we can pay to build capital expenses, including, I guess, new courthouses, through this vehicle of a court cost. And the court, I cite a case from 2009 where the Court of Criminal Appeals expressly reiterates again what has always been Texas law, going again back to 1845, that court costs are to remunerate the government for the judicial resource actually expended. It's not whatever's greatest, and it's not to balance the budget. Code of Criminal Article 103.002 actually has been in existence since 1855, and it continues to state that court costs cannot be awarded unless expressly provided by law. And if anything, neither the legislature nor the commissioner's court in this case expressly provided by law that my client was supposed to pay $60 for something that nobody disputes cost about $5. And so I think, number one, the Commissioner's Court never approved $60 because neither the recommendation nor their public deliberations nor the agenda item or anything else ever even referred or considered or was intended to include $60 for certified mail. Number two, if you assume that they did, then you've got the statute saying it can't be greater. It has to be reasonable, number one, and it can't be greater than the expense of certified mail. So that's, I'll return this part of the remainder of my time unless you have some questions. Unless you have some questions.
This may not seem on point to you, but to me, it is our reason for asking the question. Remember Joe Johnson Jr.'s lawsuit against Tarrant County?
Off the top of my head, I don't.
On behalf of bail bondsmen?
That would have been the sheriff charging an extra cost, right?
Exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. And he managed to get into court, and I'm sure they, I don't remember if they raised governmental immunity, but do you remember the reasoning that defeated any argument of governmental immunity in that case?
No, I don't. I did find some cases. There's kind of a split, and it's not always clear whether they're just talking about individual liability where you'd be collecting damages from the sheriff or whether you're just seeking equitable relief that would declare an action illegal and enjoining that action prospectively. And I don't recall in the Johnson case. I remember the Sheriff Bowles had a case in Dallas that was a lot like this, and as a matter of fact, I think wrongly, the Dallas Court of Appeals ruled that he could be held individually liable in order to refund the money that had wrongly been placed in the county's treasury. I don't think that that's correct law, and the reason why we're saying this is irreparable is on the 16th of this month, when that judge rules against us, I'm not sure, but at that point in time, we can't get that money back. We got 30 days to pay the judgment. We could always file a frivolous appeal and post appeal bonds in those 100-and-something cases. And that's why I'm saying I think we've met our burden in showing that I would ask at least initially for y'all just to stay it on whatever standard applies until you can render a decision. That's what I'd ask you to do.
My next question, exactly what relief are you asking this court for?
At this point in time, I want you to enter an order. You can either list all those cases at one of their exhibits, or you can just say any county or county criminal court, county court, or district court in Denton County shall abate any further action in cases where the certified mail fee has been assessed by the clerk until the disposition of this appeal. And then I can get another stay from the Supreme Court if it's adverse to me. That's the first thing I need. However, if you decide before the 16th, or for whatever reason you don't grant that relief, on final judgment or decision in this case, I would ask that you reverse the district court's judgment, explain that you can't consider the waste, endemic waste in government as being a necessary expense within the meaning of the statute, or capital costs, or fuel costs, and all these other things, and order that the district court enter a temporary injunction pending the disposition of this case in the trial court, because there's probably going to be some more testimony and evidence about it. About the merits. Okay? All right, if there's no further questions, I'll wait for rebuttal. Thank you.
I'll give opposing counsel heads up. I want to know how it's reasonable to be $60 to go physically serve somebody, and it's $60 to plop it in the mail, and both are reasonable expenses.
And I would say there actually is a judicial notice. There's a mailbox in the courthouse. And I don't know how much fuel it takes to get there.
All right, Ms. McClure.
Good morning. May it please the court, and happy Texas Independence Day as well. Going back to his argument that the Commissioner's Court did not have a recommendation or did not approve these fees properly, Commissioner's Court, like all Commissioner's Courts across the county, take care of business, a lot of different kinds of county business, and they oftentimes delegate certain responsibilities to committees, and that's what happened in this situation. They had a committee, and it was in the testimony of Jim Dotson, who's the constable there. They set the fees, and they recommended it to Commissioner's Court. Yes, you'll find that on the the tape that they provided and evidence of the commissioner's court approving the fees, there wasn't any discussion on it. That's because a lot of this stuff happens behind the scenes with the committee, and they recommend to the commissioner's court a certain fee, and they approve it because the sheriffs and the constables are on the committee, or a representative from those offices are on the committee. So, you know, if anybody knows how much it costs to serve citation in Denton County, it would be those individuals.
And so you're telling us that they purposely intended to charge $60 to plop it in the mail?
What I'm saying is that that's for service, personal service.
Personal service?
Correct.
I don't think anybody has any problem with charging $60 for personal service.
That's why we had to go back to the statutes, and the clerks, they have their hands tied on this because Texas Local Government Code 118.131 provides that the commissioner's court shall set reasonable fees for the services of the sheriff and the constables.
Okay.
And there isn't a reasonableness test within those fees. However, if you look at Texas Government Code Section 51.3192 and Texas Local Government Code Sections 118.0523F and 118.063, it provides that the clerks shall collect what has been set for the sheriffs and the constables. It's not discretionary on their part. It's just how the statute is written, and that's what they collect. There is no reasonableness test with that certain fee. It's just a fee that's authorized by statute.
Well, how do you explain Government Code 118.131?
That is where the Commissioner's Court, where the legislature has delegated to the Commissioner's Court the authority to set those fees.
And when they're outside of their authority?
When they're outside of their authority, then yes, Article 5, Section 8 of the Constitution then applies, because that would be an abuse of discretion if they're outside their authority. The appellants cite Camacho and Bowles.
And the remedy is?
The remedy on that, yes. I mean, if they're outside their authority, like in the Bowles and the Camacho cases, then yes, they can be held to, that could be an abuse of discretion. However, in this case, it's different. The constables are permitted by Texas Rules of Civil Procedure to serve citation. That's what they do. It's authorized. That wasn't authorized. The same thing that they were charging for in Camacho and Bowles was not authorized by statute. In this case, citation fees are authorized by statute. So there is no jurisdictional problem with the commissioner's court setting those fees and the sheriff collecting those fees. And then that ties into the clerk's statutes, where they have no discretion, they just have to charge whatever is set for the constables and sheriffs. And on it, the district clerk,
they decided it would be $1,000 to plop it in the mail. Okay. Is that your position?
I think that the hands are tied. I think the remedy is, I think the clerk's hands are tied.
The remedy is?
The remedy is with the legislature. I think that if
the legislature. Legislature, I think, has already decided that the fees have to be reasonable and may not be set higher than is necessary to pay the expenses provided by the service.
The fees for the sheriffs and the constables, but that does not carry over to the other statutes for the district clerk and the county clerk to charge the same fee. So the statute, if that's not correct, that needs to be taken up with the legislature.
Your interpretation is that once it's determined what is reasonable for the sheriff or the constable to actually drive out, track the person down, and put the document in that person's hand, once the reasonable cost of that is determined, the clerk is required to charge that for sticking in a letter in the mail?
Correct. That's the way the statute is written. That is the way that it's written. And if there's also, Commissioner's Court is a public open forum. And if there's someone that has an issue with the price on this thing, no one showed up to complain about it at the time.
What's the purpose of this government code section if there's no remedy?
If there's no remedy?
Well, if the commissioners have not set a reasonable fee and it is set higher than necessary, what's the remedy?
The remedy is I think that's more of a direction from the legislature to the commissioner's court on how to set the fees.
Yes.
Right. But you know, if you go back and look at, that's where my legislative immunity argument ties into, because if you look in the case Hooten versus Enriquez, a district court may not interfere with the discretionary function of the commissioner's court. This is a discretionary function. The statute says the commissioner's court may set these fees, and the fees that they set are discretionary. It's a legislative function. Therefore, it takes it out of the Article 5, Section 8 review, because they're immune from liability on that issue.
But I thought a minute ago you said that the fee was not discretionary, that once the fee is established for the sheriffs for service, then the commissioner's court has no discretion but to impose the same fee.
Correct. Well, the commissioner's court does not impose the same fee on the clerks. That's purely by statute. That's a separate issue. We're looking at the commissioner's court setting fees for the constables and the sheriffs. And then a statute that ties the citation set by the constables and sheriff to the clerks. And there is no reasonableness test. It's just that's what they have to collect under the statute. And it's ministerial duties, not something that they have discretion in reducing the cost on. So their hands are tied in that aspect. And going back to the trial court's decision on this, the trial court judge did not act arbitrarily. He looked at certain aspects of what commissioner's court did. The testimony of Jim Dotson, the time and travel and fuel costs, the salaries. He looked at all that testimony, and he, in his discretion, felt like the commissioner's court did not abuse its discretion in setting the fees the way it did.
For personal service, correct, for citation.
That's right. I would agree with you on that. I think it is a certified mail issue that's at issue in this case. However,
fuel costs,
again,
et cetera.
The district and county clerk are tied to charging that by statute. They don't have a discretionary function in that. The statute says, whatever the sheriff and constables charge, they have to charge too. So there's really nothing they can do about that aspect of it. Commissioner's court doesn't have a say in the certified mail with regards to the district and county clerks, because that's set by statute.
Okay, so let's just back up. You're the other side. What's the remedy? And don't tell me to go to the legislature. The legislature has already spoken and told the commissioner's court what to do.
Okay, they told commissioner's court what to do,
yes,
but the legislature has not changed. The legislature has set whatever the amount is by statute for the district and county clerks. That's where the remedy lies, because that needs to be changed.
The remedy is?
It's a legislative remedy.
Do what?
To petition the legislature to change the... The Professional Bondsman Association is a huge lobbyist effort. I've seen them make all kinds of laws in the last several years. You know, this is something that is beyond what Commissioner's Court can do at this point. They can't change what the statute that provides that the district and county clerks can collect that fee.
I didn't hear a remedy, so okay.
Well, and another aspect of it too is that, again, they can go back to commissioner's court and protest the fee if they feel like it's unreasonable. I mean, they have a say. I got my car registration the other day, and it's a $75 fee. I don't really like it, but I'm kind of stuck with having to pay that. I'm not sure that I have a remedy as far as suing the county or the state over it. And same thing here. I mean, it's set by statute. I don't know that they can go back and sue the county over a fee that's set by statute by the legislature.
Did the legislature decide it was $60?
The legislature decided that whatever the county set for the sheriffs and the constables would be the fee. So I asked that the court affirm the trial court's decision overruling appellant's request for a temporary injunction on the basis that the trial court did not abuse its discretion. And when an appellate court views, and this is just in a court case that came down in Fort Worth in 2010, and Lifeguard Benefits, an appellate court views the evidence in light most favorable to the trial court's order, indulging every reasonable inference in its favor. And, you know, as long as that the order is not so arbitrary that it exceeds the bounds of reasonable discretion, then it should be upheld. And also, a reviewing court cannot substitute its judgment for that of the trial court, even if it were to have reached a different conclusion. So even if a different conclusion would have been reached by this court than what the trial court judge determined, it should not be overturned for that reason. And he did have reasons for ruling the way he did with the testimony of Constable Jim Dotson, and he took judicial notice of other factors, such as the number of citations issued, the wages and benefits to employees. Whether that's wrong or not, that's his own, that's what he brings to the table as far as experience working in county government. But nonetheless, even if he didn't take judicial notice, there is plenty of evidence to show that he was not arbitrary in making his decision.
What about the temporary relief that the appellant has requested? What is the county's position in regard to that?
Well, we're not going, there's a motion for a new trial hearing March 16th. And even if March 16th is when they're going to rehear the cases on that. And even if something is signed, judgment is signed that day, they still have 30 additional days before any collection can be done on those cases. And if they file an appeal, then that even extends it further. So they're not in any imminent harm.
What if the order isn't signed that day?
Then it still extends their timetable to get a final judgment. And thus lessens their harm argument if it still goes on a little bit longer.
But how can they appeal since our prior cases they can't?
I think they can pretty much appeal. They can retax the cost. It's another thing that they can try to do. I understand they want to abate the cases, and these cases have been sitting there for a long time. The judges are somewhat hesitant at this point to keep abating them. However, it seems like they can do an appeal if they so choose to, or retax, file a motion to retax cost.
So all 100 cases are in several different district courts?
Correct.
In Denton County?
Mostly they're in county court.
Mostly in county.
Mostly, but there are some in other district courts as well. And if there are no other questions, then I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. McClure. Mr. Gladden.
I'll try to be brief. First of all, those are final hearings on the 16th of this month. They're not motions for new trial. I was granted motions for new trial and the cases from November 19th because the state did not give me notice that they had a hearing that was scheduled. And they unilaterally went in and scheduled a hearing and then misrepresented to the judge, Garcia, that I had been given notice of that hearing. And so I had to do 100-some-odd motions for new trial, and we had a hearing on that on January 21st, and it was granted in all cases. And I've got a record of that. If the court asks, I'll supplement it with a record of that hearing that we had on January 21st, where all these cases were granted new trials. And all these cases are now set for final hearing. I believe it's on March 16th. That is of this month. And I don't have any remedy by appeal. If I wanted to file frivolous appeals and post bonds in 119 cases or 100 and some odd cases, I don't think that would be very professional because this court knows and I know and everybody knows that I don't have an issue from the NYSI cases. That's why I need some kind of relief between now and the 16th.
What do we do Government Code Section 51.319 says the district clerk shall collect for serving process by certified or registered mail, the same fee that sheriffs and constables are authorized to charge for the service under Section 118.131 Local Government Code.
It's actually, service is plural. I interpret that to mean that the Commissioner's Court can authorize constables and sheriffs to serve, use the process by certified mail, and that once they establish that fee for certified mail, the same fee will apply should the district clerk perform that function, that is, service by certified mail. It does not, as the state contends, mean that if you get an astronaut to deliver something to the moon, that you can charge the same fee for serving by certified mail. If you got a sheriff that's an astronaut, that the clerk can charge the same fee that the astronaut does to serve a different use a different method of service.
Okay, so you're saying if the sheriff, the constable serve by certified mail, then the district clerk is required to charge the same fee they charge for service by mail, not for personal service.
Right. Right. And if the district clerk went out and did personal service, she could charge the same amount that had been authorized by the commissioner's court for personal service. That's the way I interpret the word services, and especially if you got all these other statutes that are talking about $1 plus postage for certified mail, for expunctions. The general rule in the Civil Practices and Remedies Code, I believe it's $1 plus postage for service by certified mail. And it's just absurd to say that the legislature meant you could charge whatever you want and have and Article 5.8, there's actually a lot of interesting history. Tarrant County, or Fort Worth, became the county seat because they rigged the election and took it away from Birdville. And the people that sued about it didn't get any relief because the Texas Constitution at that time did not allow a remedy because the district courts didn't have jurisdiction to supervise or control or review actions or orders of commissioners' courts. They finally got the Constitution changed in 1891, and that tolls case had the same problem was going on over in Van Zandt County between Canton and Wills Point. Is it Canton or whoever? I don't even know who the county seat is, but whoever ended up getting it rigged the election, and they didn't have a remedy either until that amendment was enacted or adopted and ratified in 1891. You've got complete equitable relief to grant all the relief. There is no such thing as a legislative immunity to obstruct the district court's equitable authority to do that. These are legal questions. You might call it an abuse of discretion, but if the court misapplies the law, which the district court did, and the commissioner's court either exceeded what the statute allowed or acted arbitrarily in arriving at $60, I don't see how anything could be more arbitrary. Constable Dotson said he didn't even submit a recommendation about what the expense of certified mail was. It was only personal service. The commissioner's court did not deliberate. The video shows it. They're not even claiming. I've yet to hear them say that the commissioner's court ever even considered the cost of certified mail or what was greater or less than was necessary for certified mail. And so we're getting kind of an Alice in Wonderland thing where they vote for one thing, and then the clerk, she said in her testimony that she just assumed she could charge the same thing as personal service for certified mail. No one even told her that that's what the commissioner's court voted to approve, and that she assumed that's in the record and it's cited in the brief. And so I don't think there's discretion. I don't think there would be any legislative immunity with anyone other than the commissioner's court, but I certainly don't think it forecloses the remedy we're asking for. Thank you.
Actually, the Fort Worth people went over and purloined the Birdville keg of whiskey that they had set up outside the Birdville polling place, set it up outside the Fort Worth polling place.
Well, I just got finished reading Professor Garrett, Fort Worth, A Frontier Triumph, and it's the best book on Fort Worth history, and there's not a dispute. Fort Worth got people from Wise County to come out here.
Yeah, Sam Woody brought 13 people from Wise County to vote for Fort Worth, and Fort Worth won by 8 votes.
That's right.
And Ms. McClure, I was not barking at you. I was barking at the absurdity of charging $60 for a $5 service, so don't think I was barking at you.
Oh, absolutely not.
All right.
All right, we thank you for your arguments today and your submissions and your briefing. Your case is submitted. That being the only case for our 10:30 docket, we will recess.
Thank you.
All right.